Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
This is Mitchell Davis, host of Taste Matters. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, where someone just slammed their water bottle into the window onto which I can look out into their pizza lunch. Welcome, welcome. On today's show, we have Coach Mark Smallwood, Executive Director of Rodale Institute, and after the break, Eileen Chiarello, wife of celebrity chef and vintner Michael Chiarello, who will talk about her project Barn Raiser, which she founded to grow the sustainable food movement. But before that, I wanted to say hello to all of my new friends from the Guild of Sommeliers. This past week, I passed level one of the Court of Master Sommeliers, the introductory level, which is the first step of four to earn the title of Master Sommelier. If you have Netflix and you enjoy documentaries about really niche topics, I highly recommend a film called Somm, S-O-M-M, which is a look into the lives and studies of a few of the few elite wine tasters in the world. While I was there, I did some recording of my experience, and I will be making a radio story to share with you. But first, I wanted to connect my lifetime of swirling and sniffing and tasting and deducing a wine with our show sponsor, Kraft Coffee. I have been drinking my morning coffee from their June box that was curated especially for me, according to this questionnaire that they send you when you sign up, and they mail everything right to your door, and they ask you what you like, and printed on each package are some tasting notes, and they sound just like sommelier speak. And often, like, when I taste wine, or when you hear someone tasting wine, or you hear someone writing about the flavors in coffee, it sounds silly, right? Like, I recorded myself saying, this wine is straw yellow, there are grassy notes, high minerality, I get wet stones, there's no indication of oak. But the thing is, it's really not that silly, and there's a purpose and a reason for having people who utilize a common language when they describe something that's esoteric and obscure, like, damp earth, or garden hose. And then you say garden hose, and everyone knows what that smells like. Well, everyone who has a garden knows what that smells like. And by subscribing to Kraft Coffee's mailing service, I'm trusting someone who's very skilled in the world of coffee. I am not. I'm very skilled in the world of wine. Coffee, I just love and appreciate, and I'm trusting them to make the selections for me so that I can start my day with something smoky or something green. And they're so right on. So too, when you get a really good wine recommendation. If you go to Kraft Coffee right now, sign up for their coffee mailing, use the code SHARP and save 10% off your order. And it's like having a coffee sommelier right in your kitchen, which is what I need at 5:30 in the morning with a screaming toddler in his high chair. Okay, without further ado, let me welcome to Sharp and Hot Coach Mark Smallwood, Executive Director at Rodale Institute in beautiful Cutsdown, Pennsylvania. Hi, Coach.
Hi, good afternoon. It is beautiful here today. It is really super nice.
My husband and I traveled out there, and we were just so blown away with the beautiful rolling hills and everything that you guys are doing out there. So for listeners who may not be familiar with Rodale Institute and Rodale Inc. and the division between the two, can you give us sort of a broad overview of what Rodale Institute does and what your history is?
Yeah, of course. First of all, let me make note that there is an open invite here, just as you and your husband came and visited. We'd like all of your listeners to take a road trip and come and see us. We're open 7 days a week. There's a self-guided walking tour here, and we actually encourage people to get off the walking tour sometimes and go off and explore. So
I love that. And it is such a warm and welcoming place to walk around.
Yes, it's really fun here. It's a great place to come to work. And I'll tell you a little bit about some of the history. Our founder, J.I. Rodale, he was responsible for writing on a chalkboard back in 1940 a couple of different phrases. One of them was using the two words organic agriculture together for the first time. He wrote that in a chalkboard in his office. I've seen the chalkboard. He's also responsible for the phrase, healthy soil, healthy food, healthy people. And, of course, that's still our mantra. 1947, he came to Emmaus, Pennsylvania, with a lot of research in soil. He was concerned in 1940 when the World War II began to grow, and they were pulling the fertilizer of choice off of the fields in our food system and putting it back into ammunition. It's called ammonium nitrate. And he was sort of scratching his head saying, now wait a minute, that's the stuff they're using to grow our food, and now they're using it to make munitions. Number one, that doesn't make sense. Number two, what are we going to use now if they're removing that source of nitrogen? And so he dug in deeply from 1940 to 1947 with all of the experts in the field of soil, and really then came up with this phrase, healthy soil means healthy food, means healthy people. And so we have about 25 different research projects here on the farm. We're 333 acres. We have PhDs on staff, and we focus on the soil all the time, and that's been our history forever. We also delve into nutrient density and food, of course, but our ultimate goal is global human health. We're really trying to work our way out of a job. Right now, currently, I think job security is safe. We're not close to global human health, but that's really our ultimate goal. And when we've accomplished that goal, you know, we'll move on. But right now, that's where we focus. So it always starts with the soil. We're always delving into food issues, but human health is paramount.
How rare an opportunity to be actively trying to get yourself out of job security and know that you don't have to worry about it.
Well, I think not in the short term. So the other thing that Jay, I was very interested in, and this adds to the historical piece, he wanted desperately to be a publisher. He was not in agriculture. He was in manufacturing, actually, and that's where he made his wealth. But then when he came to Emmaus, Pennsylvania, and started the Institute, he also started Rodale Incorporated, at one point called Rodale Press. That was the publishing company. And initially, 1942, he started Prevention Magazine and Organic Gardening Magazine, but he was a prolific writer and publisher and lots of concepts. And so anytime he came up with a concept, he'd try and get a publication wrapped around it too. So I'll share with you my two favorites, because there's pages and pages of titles of magazines that he published that did not work. One of them was called "You're Wrong About That," and it was a disaster. It failed financially, so they moved on.
And wait, was it just a magazine of misconceptions about things?
You know, it was just all about. Well, I guess that's a good way to put it. Sort of let's find out what the myth is here and tell the truth.
Right. Okay.
And so the following year, he came out with another magazine, and it was called "You're Wrong About That Too."
So, not a man who learns from his mistakes.
you can kind of capture what he was all about in that example, I believe.
Sure.
Fascinating guy. So, the publishing company, of course, does exist. They're still in Emmaus. When J.I. passed away, Bob Rodale, his son, and his wife, Ardith, moved to Kutztown, Pennsylvania, and bought the farm here. We are now, as I said, 333 acres, and we are a completely separate entity from the publishing company. We are still involved with the family. Maria Rodale sits on our board. She's my boss, so they're very active still. Maya Rodale, her daughter, just joined our board about a year ago. So the family is embedded in what we do, but we don't do books.
Right.
I think what I like to tell everybody is we do the research that makes sure to make sure what goes in the books is the truth.
Right. And most recently, or very recently, you had a piece based on your research about climate change that and regenerative organic agriculture, which was published in the Wall Street Journal.
That's right. And I think you used the most important word, which is regenerative. And it was a word that Bob Rodale, J.I.'s son, who took J.I.'s healthy soil, healthy food, healthy people to another level. He is talking about regenerative farming as leaving behind what you found in a better position than when you found it. That's what regenerative is. And so we based our white paper on that theory, that word, and combining it with organic. Our claim is that not only can we help mitigate what is currently being emitted in terms of global warming gases, we have an answer for true reversal. We can actually tip the needle past 100% of the current emissions and begin to draw down the excesses.
How are you? I mean, I learned about this while I was out there, and to hear you say that is such a revolutionary idea that I feel like all of Congress should be listening. So can you give us sort of in a nutshell how that works?
Yes, it's so simple. And I think that's the beauty of it. And I also want to make sure everybody understands there's no downside to it. There's no extra cost. There's no extra burden. We're actually going to regenerate soil. We're going to recarbonize soil. And it's really simple. Two important things. Number one, it's called photosynthesis, and it's nature. It's Mother Nature at her finest, pulling carbon dioxide out of the air using sunlight energy and water, H2O, CO2, and sunlight energy. The green plants take those substances and turn them into C6H12O6, simple sugar. So we take water and carbon out of the air and make sugar in a green plant. And the green plants take that sugar and exude it into the soil that surrounds its biomass. And what's next? We need good, healthy, organic soil full of microorganisms, bacteria, fungi, nematodes, microarthropods. They all eat the sugar. It's candy. We welcome them to the party. We give them, each plant has a little different recipe. I call it cake and cookies. So broccoli provides a cake and cookie of its own making. Maple trees, mugo pines, azaleas, they all have their own recipe. And the microorganisms that surround that biomass like that set of candy the best. And when they eat the carbon chains, they hold it inside their bodies. That's carbon sequestration. So photosynthesis, pulling carbon out of the air, green plants turning it into sugar, and feeding it to the good, healthy biological soil. That is regenerative organic farming.
And what you've proven at Rodale Institute, that people are welcome to come walk around and look at what you've done, is that it's scalable and it's accessible to people who are currently using pesticides and herbicides that may, I'll editorialize, that are contributing to the collapse of the honeybee population and, you know, all sorts of, the poor monoculture farming practices. Like, you've proven that this, you can make a change. A farmer who's doing these sort of conventional methods could make this change now and start to see this carbon sequestration. How long does it take before they start to see that 110%?
Well, first of all, let's be clear that a farmer that's growing conventionally, I think they would have a hard time explaining to me that using chemicals in the food system is in any way regenerative. I don't know that they would be able to help me in that regard. Secondly, farmers in transition, it takes 3 years to begin to change the soil over. That's what our USDA standard is. It's funny that you mentioned farmers and transition. We have two huge farmers in terms of land mass from Illinois here today. They're on the western part of Illinois. They're here today with our staff walking through how do we get started. We want to transition.
What excellent news.
It's great news. And I talked to them this afternoon. They were sitting on the rocking chairs out on our front porch. And I said, we would really love to document this process. You guys can be a beautiful case study for 2014 moving forward for other farmers. It can be done. It can be done in large scale. It can be done in the Midwest where the chemical food production system is dominant.
And it can be done profitably, which I think is sort of the bottom line for a lot of people who are depending on their ground to produce, you know, essentially money to feed their families on.
Let's talk about organic corn, feed corn versus conventional feed corn. Conventional feed corn right now is $4.75 a bushel. Organic feed corn right now, ready?
Mm-hmm.
$18.
Whoa.
Yeah, so these guys see the handwriting on the wall. They've been farming for generations, and they're saying to us, we're not building soil. We're destroying soil. It's ending up in the Gulf of Mexico, and we want to stop that. And so we've talked to them today, literally just an hour ago, about regenerative organic farming and the fact that you're going to leave your soil behind better than you found it for the next generation that's going to come here and farm, whether it's your family or someone else's.
What an uplifting and hope-filled message. I love it.
Yeah,
I have I have put a link on sharpandhot.com so that people can go to rodaleinstitute.org, get directions so that you can take a road trip out there and learn about the other initiatives that Rodale Institute is behind and read a lot of the research and the white paper from the Wall Street Journal. Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to come on Heritage Radio and uplift all of us.
It is my great pleasure.
Thank you so much. And after the break, we have Eileen Chiarello, who is the founder of Barn Raiser, which I think is going to dovetail perfectly with this conversation. Mark, you have a great 4th of July weekend.
Okay, you too. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Julia Tertian, host of Radio Cherry Bomb. This summer, Heritage Radio Network is turning 5. Since our launch in 2009, we've continued to bring you food and culture content like nobody else. And we need your help. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a passionate, grassroots, action-oriented nonprofit organization. That means we depend on the support from listeners like you to help keep us alive. If you love what you hear on Heritage Radio Network, visit our website and become a member today. Thanks for listening, and thank you for your support.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hi, I'm Reggie Watts, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot, everyone. I am your host, Emily Peterson, coming to you live from Roberta's Pizza at Bushwick, Brooklyn, airing on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Joining me now on the line from California is Barn Raiser founder Eileen Chiarello. Hi, Eileen.
Hello, Chef Emily. How are you?
I'm great. It's so wonderful to have you on the phone with me today. How's California?
Well, it's both hot and foggy, depending on where you are. The Napa Valley, 100 degrees, and Sausalito, where I am right now, is, you know, correspondingly as cold.
Well, I don't know if you heard the first half of the show. I was talking about wine, and I was part of the introductory course in the Master Sommelier's exam this week in New York City, and I learned all about the Napa Valley.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we'd love to have you out here, but I wish I was sitting there with you in Brooklyn, the East Coast hub of all wonderful artisan foods.
It is the truth. We do have that reputation here in Brooklyn. So in order to help these people out, you have created something called Barn Raiser, which, if I understand correctly, is sort of like an artisanal Kickstarter, right?
Yeah, really, there are 41 million Americans who align themselves with health and sustainability today. And, you know, thanks to the sensibilities of the millennials, that's growing even more around the globe. So based on the history that I've had with my husband over the last 15 years, doing all kinds of different food businesses and sustainable farming ourselves, Barn Raiser was really an idea that was born out of the desire to give those millions of people a way to support the wonderful innovators who are remaking our food system, and give those people a way to use their influence to grow this movement to the point where, hopefully, sustainability sometime in the very near future for our kids will become the standard. So we believe that, you know, there's a very fun and simple way for millions of people to get involved and connect with these modern day heroes, of which you're surrounded by many and you have many on your show every week. So, you know, to share their inspirational stories and then fund their projects means we're all part of getting a better, healthier food to our families.
I just love this idea. I love that you can, well, you have some sort of benchmarks that someone coming to you who says, I want to be part of Barn Raiser. I want you to help me fund this project, this idea that I have. And let's say, I'll use my husband as an example. He wanted to use an abandoned car showroom and grow hydroponic lettuces and tilapia. And he thought
okay,
that he, in
well,
this closed
system.
Okay,
well, first of all, he's extremely creative.
I have to say, it's not his original idea. There's someone else who's already doing it. But let's give him credit for it. Forget okay. He won't listen anyway. Just forget I said anything.
So what was your question?
So how, if he comes to you, or if someone with this, you know, big idea comes to you and says, how can you help me make this happen? What's the process that you go through in order to sort of screen the candidates before they become part of Barn Raiser?
So Barn Raiser is just a few months old, and so we're basically curating and helping the first dozen projects to make sure that the experience is appropriate and everybody has the tools that they need, after which in the late summer, early fall, people will be able to come on and start their own projects with on their own. So right now, anybody who has a project idea just in the next 30 days can email me directly, eileen@barnraiser.us. But from, you know, September on out, they will be able to come on to the website and have all the tools to build and launch their own project. We're interested in, you know, the idea that we're all in this together. And from a very little initiative to a very big initiative, hundreds of thousands of people need to have the opportunity to get up to bat in this world of sustainable food and farming. And then thousands of good ideas and change will be born out of that, right? So it doesn't matter if the idea is about your own personal inspiration or if it's about really shaping sort of a major part of the food system, from food products to community initiatives, nonprofits to businesses. We will entertain all of those ideas, and ultimately the communities that build around these projects are where the support comes in and the richness comes in. But for tools, we think it's really very important to help people understand not only how to tell your story well, but then how to get the word out. So we're building a lot of those sort of infrastructure tools in to help people get the word out. And we feel like it's our responsibility to make sure that projects get seen in and around the internet in very big ways, not just on our website.
I love that idea, and I love that you provide the sort of PR mentorship to make sure that you go from someone who has this, like, grand idea to sort of distill it and make it media friendly so that they're able to talk about it and therefore drum up support.
Well, as you know, some of our modern day heroes in our world, and increasingly so, I think for you know, my kids and your kids' generation, will be people that are earthbound and do have this wonderful magic way with making sure that our world continues to be bountiful. And those people may or may not necessarily be social media mavericks. Right. It doesn't mean that their project isn't glorious and should be funded. That's right. My perspective on it. And so building in some of those tools to make sure that everybody can take advantage of them and is the most successful is our initiative.
And along that same line, I have a pretty broad cynical streak, having been born and raised in New York. I often ask delicately of people who make very niche artisanal products, where they get their funding from and do they have a day job? Because if you don't have a chunk of money in the bank that can support your, without being too specific, but your, honeybee's wax, hot sauce, bar of soap, how are you doing that? Like, let's be honest with everybody about your backstory. Do you have a trust fund is sort of the question that I'm scared to ask people directly, because I don't want to offend anyone. There's no, nobody should not do something because they have the means to do it on their own. But a project like yours opens the door and sort of takes that block out of the way of people who would otherwise need some financial support to get a business off the ground while also still paying their bills every month.
You're absolutely right. I'm not sure if you know, but my husband's background, he's a chef, Michael Chiarello, and his background includes, among other things, specialty food production. So we know very well that there are real barriers to entry, and one of those is just getting to the right minimums when you go to produce specialty food. So what we love about Barn Raiser and the structure and the opportunity is you can actually take some of that risk off the table for artisan food producers. And you can they can set up their projects such that they're producing what people say they want in advance. That's a huge benefit. Now, there are still a lot of other things that have to happen for the specialty food world to become easier for people to make into a sustainable and viable business.
Right.
But this is one really important step. And the community as a whole on Barn Raiser, when you show up and put a project on Barn Raiser as opposed to maybe a more generalized platform, you know that you've got an audience that's already pre-qualified and very interested in what you're doing. And that's a big benefit for a small food producer.
Right. And I think the listeners of Heritage Radio Network, we sort of describe them in the same way. Like, we have, I'm sure there are people who are listening right now who are like, wait, what is this website? How do I get on there? Because it is this very self-selecting group of people who are into, making the world a better place through food and agriculture, which is something that I really, a community that I love being part of. So are there, you said there are 12 projects that are up right now. Are they available to be funded? Are you at liberty to talk about them, or are they still
Absolutely.
In the... Okay, go ahead.
If your listeners go to barnraiser.us, they will see some projects that have already been funded and some that have just been launched. So we just launched two exciting new projects. One that I would love to talk about because I think this is such a wonderful story. They all are wonderful stories. But there's an amazing project that just got launched this week from a legend in organic farming, and his name is Amigo Bob Conti. He's been doing organic farming for 30 years. If you travel up and down the West Coast, you will run into many of the people whose farms he has helped to convert from conventional farming to sustainable. And his team has found and are saving heirloom fruit and nut trees that are growing in the wild and still producing fruit from the gold rush era.
Wow.
Now imagine
how
that.
Cool.
So what's significant about this is, their heirlooms that were brought in the 1800s, and they're hardy. They've survived. They have dealt with all kinds of weather changes, drought, disease. So all that resistance is built into these very hardy genetics. There are over 80 varieties of apples, cherries, figs, plums, grapes, almonds. Now, just wrap your mind around that for a minute. And Amigo and his team have found these in the wild and are going to create a mother orchard from this plant material that already has this built-in resistance to problems and this incredible flavor and nutrition because they're old and, very, very interesting varietals that none of us have ever tasted in our lifetimes. And they're going to be available for people to then grow and cultivate. So over a decade, couple decades of his work has resulted in this project. So I absolutely love the kinds of stories that are coming to be on Barnraiser, and the people that they represent are so fascinating, and their projects are so important and interesting. Not only because intellectually they're interesting, but we all know that we need to preserve the diversity, biodiversity in our plants that, you know, that we eat, the way we think about endangered animals.
Sure.
They have a lot more nutrition, and they're definitely going to be able to stand the kind of weather changes that we're seeing and the kind of, you know, rain situations that we're seeing over the next couple of decades. So it's critical on many levels, but it's mostly very interesting to think that I can actually give some of the flavor that I enjoyed as a kid in the types of fruits that I had back to future generations, because right now, it's pretty hard to find.
It just tastes a Driscoll strawberry from the supermarket right now, and then go to the farmer's market and taste the strawberry grown
That's
locally.
Right.
I mean, it's just night and day. And you can't, I mean, how do you explain to somebody in February, like, no, I promise there's a difference. You just have to wait till June to learn what it is.
Yeah, and as a sort of a co-creator by backing this project, you know, you become such an interesting integral part of what Amigo Bob gets to do. You can get a gift box of these heirloom fruits and nuts, a phone consultation with him, which I can tell you is well worth it because he's walked our vineyards many, many times with Michael. You can go on a walking tour with these wild plants to see where they found them and what they look like. Or you could even plant your own orchard based on this plant material. So it's really exciting to be co-creators with these innovators, I think, is a big part of the benefit of showing up. And you know, thousands of people at $50 really adds up.
Right. And I look forward to hosting some of your projects on this very show.
That would be fantastic.
That is in the works.
We would love to have them. and they're all very much in their own right, very interesting guests for you.
Excellent. Eileen, thank you so much for taking the time to come on Sharp and Hot today. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you, Emily. Next time I'll come to see you in person.
Come see me in person. I'm going to come to the Napa Valley one of these days. In the meantime, have a great 4th of July.
Thank you very much.
I want to thank my guests for coming on the show today. Special thanks to Kat at Dataskope and Aaron at Rodale Institute. Thank you again to our sponsor, Kraft Coffee. And listeners, if you tweet this week about how much you love Heritage Radio Network with the hashtag GrowFoodRadio, you'll be entered to win some HRN swag. I'll throw in a Sharp and Hot magnet for you and become a member at heritageradionetwork.org by clicking on the donate button. Find me on Facebook and Twitter at Chef Emily P. And until next week, keep playing with fire and knives.
Sharp and hot with Chef Emily. Sharp and hot with Chef Emily.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.